From time to time on Fridays, we're continuing our Lost and Found Sound series. With the movie industry presenting the Academy Awards on Sunday, today we're taking a behind-the-scenes tour of film sound. In movies, it is often sound that gives characters their weight and flesh, and not just the voice of the actor. There's the tapping of Fred Astaire's shoes, for instance, or the squeak of Mad Max's leather jacket. And the sounds you hear in the theater usually have been added to the production, added by a Foley artist. From 1927 to 1960, at Universal Pictures, Jack Foley, a former Brooklyn dock worker, developed a method for adding sounds to a movie as it was being projected on a soundstage. When the creature dove into the Black Lagoon, Jack Foley splashed water in a bathtub. When Spartacus fought, Foley clanked swords. Despite his decades in front of a microphone, there's no recording of Foley's voice, no picture of him on his stage, but he survives in the backlot lore of the people who watched him work. Producer Yair Reiner now presents the story of Jack Foley.
Jack was more in sync with what was happening on the screen than anybody else. And he always seemed to come up with the right prop or the right vegetable or the right piece of meat or whatever it took. If it was kind of a fight or something and somebody got hit in the head, he'd go up to the Universal Food Market and buy a watermelon and hit the watermelon so it would pop and sound like somebody got hit in the head.
He walked women really well, by the way. There were a whole cadre of actors and actresses that insisted, I do a picture, this man walks my footsteps. The term Dwayne Foley didn't come in for a long time.
We'd go out looking for shoes. We like old shoes, squeaky shoes, hard shoes, soft shoes, tennis shoes. Believe it or not, we never used the women's shoes. We never used women's shoes.
Jack Foley's movie career began in 1914 in the high desert town of Bishop, California. Foley was working at the local hardware store when some Hollywood producers came to town looking for spots to shoot westerns. Foley offered to help and got a job as a location scout before eventually being hired by Universal Pictures in Los Angeles. In the decade that followed, Foley pitched in wherever he was needed on the Universal lot, playing everything from stuntman to silent movie director. But Foley's real story begins in 1927, when Hollywood began scrambling into the era of sound. This is how Foley recalled that time in an article he wrote for the Universal Club News a quarter century later, read here by Mike Levine.
The Warner kids on the neighboring ranch had just come up with a sound picture, the jazz singer, while the hard-riding, cliff-hanging shoot-from-the-hip boys on the Universal Ranch were complacently rounding up the last few scenes of the great American musical, Showboat, a silent musical. Faces around here were so red, someone yelled, "The Indians are going." Someone asked, "Are we still in business?" So signs appeared on doors around the lot, calling on employees with any knowledge of radio to report to the head of the camera and laboratory departments.
Foley answered the call, citing as his knowledge of radio a short stint he had had with the telephone company. A few days later, the sound team convened on Stage 10 with the intention of turning the silent Showboat into a real musical. Using a one-track recorder borrowed from the Warner Brothers, the sound team had to get all the sound in just a single take. The music, the cheering, the foot stomping, and everything in between.
Stage 10 swayed to the rhythm of a 40-piece orchestra, and the rest of us watched the screen, putting in the sound effects and laughter and cheers as it just kept rolling along. And with Showboat on its way, other pictures on the silent stage came in for sound shots.
And so began, on Stage 10, the era of sound at Universal Pictures. In the years that followed, recording equipment began appearing on the actual location shoots. But as it turned out, Foley's feet were still needed. Danny Kahn, a future TV editor, hung around the Universal lot in the 1930s, where his dad worked with Jack Foley.
At that time, the microphones were on these long fishing pole booms, and they weren't the fine instruments they are today. And the sound only picked up the dialogue.
Here's the final touch.
It wouldn't pick up footsteps or body movement. In time, when they ran these early movies, there were very sterile. It was just the dialogue, and there was no feeling of movement, of body rustle, whatever.
Think of it. Brain of a dead man, waiting to live again in a body I made with my own hands. With my own hands.
To help bring their movies to life, other studios created sound libraries with generic recordings of all these missing sounds. The sound editor on a picture would cut and paste in these recordings one by one, matching sound to image, footstep by footstep. The process was not only time-consuming, it made everyone's feet and all the effects sound more or less the same.
Early on, Jack Foley realized that there's a better way to do this.
John Resch is the Foley artist on the Warner Brothers Foley stage.
His idea was, maybe we can project the film and record the sound effects in sync with the picture. Imagine going into a movie theater, taking out all the seats and the carpeting, and having surfaces that we find out in reality. Dirt, cobblestone, gravel. And start the film rolling. Well, Jack Foley put on shoes. He'd walk in sync with the picture. And then he'd stop and say, how was that? They say, fine. They're, okay, then they go again. But rather than doing the feet, then we do the keys get coming up. And then we do the door opening. That's literally just the door. And all those things together would create the Foley, as we call it.
To visitors, Foley's stage looked more like a garage than a recording studio. Besides the heaps of loose dirt and gravel Foley used for making footsteps, there were piles of miscellaneous junk. Shoes, old clothes, newspapers, telephones, kitchen utensils. But there was a method to Foley's mess. On his first pass through a movie, Foley added footsteps. On a second and third pass, incidental sounds like closing doors and props. For the final pass, he'd sit on a chair holding various clothes, which he'd manipulate to create the sound of body rustle. Legend had it that with an aid of a cane, Foley could imitate the sound of three people walking in a single take. Other times, when Foley needed additional footsteps, he'd go out to the Universal backlot and nab somebody, anybody. Sound editors, stage builders, special effects men. David Udall is a supervising sound editor who learned his Foley from one of Jack Foley's apostles.
Well, then you'd have actors that would like see a film and go, my goodness, my footsteps sound like I've got, you know, knock knees or something. They sound great in the last picture. Who did that? Oh, well, that was that guy Jack Foley. Well, he's going to do mine in this one.
Indeed, in a 1962 interview with a newspaper journalist, Jack Foley claimed that every actor's walk had a unique personality.
Rock Hudson is a solid stepper. Tony Curtis has a brisk foot. Audie Murphy is springy. James Cagney is clipped. Marlon Brando, soft. John Saxon, nervous. Women are the toughest to imitate. My 250 pounds may have something to do with it, but the important thing is their steps are quicker and closer together.
While hard sound effects like gunshots and explosions were still being cut from a library, Foley learned he could custom make many sound effects with more subtlety on his stage. Crispy vegetables could be used for breaking bones, and eggs for squishy monsters. And so when Blake Edwards needed a comical motor sound for the Pink Submarine in Operation Petticoat, Foley supplied the main sound element by recording a big burp, then looping it.
Strange. Still that number one engine. I guess they were never able to fix that.
Foley's biggest challenge came in 1959 with Stanley Kubrick's Spartacus. The film's most climactic scene had the entire Roman army marching into battle with swords, shields, and chainmail, and the original location sound was unusable. Kubrick wanted to send the whole army back to Italy for a reshoot, just to get the sound. Before doing so, Kubrick decided to visit Foley's studio. Joe Sikorsky, Foley's colleague, listened in to Kubrick's conversation.
He says, I don't want to hear footsteps. I want to hear something else. And we said, we can come up with something. So we were thinking and thinking and thinking.
A few days later, Jim Troutman, another sound man on the Universal lot, peeked into stage 10 as Foley was projecting the film.
He was watching
these guys, and they were all dressed in chainmail, and they had their swords, and they were walking on the dirt, and Jack went out to his car, and he had two big wooden boxes back there of a ring with keys on them, all kinds of keys. And he walked into the room, and he stood up in front of the mic, and he went, shh, 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 shh. The Roman army coming down the hill. He saved 2-3 days' work and made it sound like it should have sounded.
Foley's greatest triumph was also his last film. Universal Pictures, where Foley had worked for over 40 years, had been bought out by Review Pictures. Carl Laemmle's family-owned movie lot was developing into a modern Hollywood corporation. Production schedules tightened, allegiances shifted. Foley, like many old-timers, felt it was time for him to go.
I remember him being really upset about it. I heard for him.
Catherine Clark is Jack Foley's granddaughter.
I remember going back to the studio and helping him clean up and pick up his stuff and leaving his office. And it was very difficult for him because it was the love of his life. And I just remember just taking stuff out of his desk, and it didn't take sound effects and things like today the Foley artists have the little brown bag of tricks with all the little things that they use for sound effects. He didn't have that. He just picked up his desk things and left. And that was about all. And what he used, was keys. I think he took his keys.
Foley was gone, but not forgotten. Dozens of colleagues had worked at his side and learned his craft. With all the layoffs at Universal, many of them were now in a position to export what they learned to the far corners of the movie business. Joe Sikorsky.
So eventually what actually happened, just like a drop in the water, that ripple effect went out all over, that all of a sudden everybody's doing it. Now they call it Foley. Let's go on a stage and do Foley. You stop to think, my God, you should have had pictures. You're on that stage so many years, so many different, like I said, you walk for the stars, and every star for years that Universal had, we walk for them. You never thought about it. You never thought of them. You're working.
For years to come, Foley's name echoed through Hollywood's backlots, eventually becoming synonymous with the craft he helped develop. A just recompense, considering that for his 33 years on stage 10 and some 5,000 miles walked for the stars, Jack Foley never received a single on-screen credit. Then again, you weren't supposed to know he existed. For NPR News, this is Yair Reiner in Los Angeles.